At some point, every relationship in professional sports can run its course. Not always in life, but in professional sports, in any league, that's the case. Nick Ashew on the Fan, I'm at Nick Ashew on Twitter, and if Twitter's still a thing anymore, it sucks now, but it is what it is. All of the socials, it's there. Giannis, looks like his time with the Bucks is finally up. Now, there is nobody that I've known over the course of my career that has been more of a Giannis fan and more of the, I'd say, the president of the Giannis fan club from the early days, before it was cool, than Chris Miles of NBA TV and FanDuel Sports Network. And he's going to jump on with me now, where I know this is a big moment for you, because it's been a rumor for a while. It's been a thing discussed behind the scenes. But it sounds like now, Chris, Giannis is out the door in Milwaukee.
You know, it's bittersweet here, because when you watch one of your children grow into something so great, you hate to see something they love come to an end. But on the real with Giannis, I think it was last year working the NBA trade deadline, and Chris Haynes, who is, I'll just say it this way, is related to Giannis through marriage, right?
Uh-huh.
He was on the phone with Thanasis at the trade deadline, and I was like, oh, this is over. Like, the Bucks and Giannis, it's a divorce. I won't get into the details, but it was like, this thing is over. So I was telling people, I believe I texted you about this. I'm like, there's no way that Giannis is still with the Bucks through the summer. And then he was. It was all these like weird reports and Giannis not wanting out. So I'm shocked that he's still on the team now, because I thought the divorce was happening this time last year.
Yeah, and the Knicks were the team that was said to be that was, they had a conversation, I guess, with them. Is that what it was? And now they're talking Knicks, Warriors, Timberwolves, and Heat is the four possible destinations. I mean, how do you think this is going to play out? Because clearly there's a lot of teams making calls. They're getting packages together. They're having discussions. If you're a team that's looking for a star, this is your big moment. But it doesn't mean that everybody has the right assets for Milwaukee.
Yeah, and the second apron is a punch in the face for that.
Mm-hmm.
You would see a lot more teams in the sweepstakes if it wasn't for the second apron and trying to make salaries match. And I think that's part of the problem. Giannis is such a difference maker that the Bucks are not going to get the return that we're so used to for a guy of his caliber, an MVP player who can, you know, change the game on both ends of the floor and lead you to a championship. That's who he is. There's no question about those things. Right? Like, who else can you say that about in the league that's still in their prime? Nikola Jokic, right? Like, I mean, that's the list. I mean, Steph Curry is obviously past his prime. LeBron past his prime. Kevin Durant past his prime. Those are the other guys that we say that definitively about. And for a team to be able to get that, I mean, you would give up the farm, but teams can no longer do that. And that's why I think he's still in Milwaukee right now.
Now, do you think he'll be in Milwaukee after the deadline? Is this something
that carries over
to the summer? No, he'll be there? Okay. Or he'll be gone, sorry.
I just can't believe he's still there. It's kind of like the Trae Young thing when they had the play-in game last year against the Chicago Bulls, and everyone is trying so hard, and Trae Young just wasn't on the final play, and I'm like, he can't play another game in all suit form. And then it kind of happened quickly, right? Like, the team just had a different identity. I think for the Bucks, once this season started, you kind of see it in like, no, this is no longer the Giannis team.
Well, once he's booing the fans and calling out teammates,
that
to me was the sign right there, was the calling out the teammates. I was like, this is it. It's done. This is working your way out. Talking to Chris Miles here on Overtime. Do you think the NBA trade deadline, which is February 5th, is going beyond Giannis? Let's put Giannis aside here. Do you think it's going to be active beyond that, or is this big draft class coming in keeping a lot of teams hoarding on to their first-round picks?
You know, that's a great question, Hollywood, in this sense. I look at, let's take a team like the Atlanta Hawks, right? Like, they got a new identity. They seem like they need a scorer, and they should go out and do something. I'm like, no, because remember, the Hawks, everyone's focused on that Pelicans pick. Like, if you read the language, it's either the Pelicans or the Bucks. They have the right to swap that pick, whichever one is higher in the draft. So their chance of getting a top two pick, if Giannis gets traded, is at over 40 to 50%. So if I'm a team like the Hawks, I'm like, I'm not trading that. If I can get Darren Peterson, who has been just this natural scorer since he was in his sixth grade, like, that changes so many things for the Atlanta Hawks. I look at the Washington Wizards. Like, there's no way I trade my draft pick when I could end up, you know, with one of these players that is a franchise-changing player. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think that's going to slow things down because typically you're like, ah, who cares about this draft? Like, Zachary Richache, yeah, I'll trade that pick, right? It's a different story this year.
You know, you and I have both covered the Wizards in past lives together, and I got to be honest with you, man, I love what they're doing. Like, I know this team is really young, and I know that there's still a lot of growth around a good portion of this roster, and not everybody's going to live up to the expectations. But, you know, watching Alex Saar develop and watching Trey Johnson shooting from the logo already and Keyshawn George, I'm looking around going, they got something here. They're young, and I know there's a lot more pieces and some vets they need and things like that, but it's just watching them finally rebuild this roster the right way versus let's just keep giving Bradley Beal extensions and then finally trade him when the, you know, the stock is low. You know what I talk about. It was like they should have traded him at least 2 years before they did. They would have gotten a boatload of picks.
Yeah, and, you know, Trey Johnson's got – you've heard me say it. When the Wizards landed at six and then Trey Johnson was still there, I'm like, he would have been the first pick in the previous year's draft.
Mm-hmm.
So while everyone's hemming and I'm like, this kid – seen him for 2 years, and as a scorer, he's just now scratching the surface. I mean, his body hasn't developed yet, and you see the things that he's doing. I'm like, he's always been this way. There's a different level of scoring and shooting and understanding for this kid. You can trust it. It's there. It's just a different speed, level, ability, confidence. Like, there wasn't a player like that in a previous year's draft. Like, it just wasn't a guy. So for the Wizards to get him at six, I'm like, yes, that is like landing the number one overall pick in a different draft. And this draft is the same way. You could end up with the fifth pick and end up with a guy who's, you know, an all-star and potentially all-NBA player.
Talking to Chris Miles here on Overtime, what do you think all this LeBron Lakers drama and Jeannie Buss and the egos? It's just a lot of this comes down to ego. I mean, I always compare it to, like, Kobe and Shaq and what they could have been and they not, you know, not wanted to play together and everybody wanted to be the guy. It just kind of feels like this is also one of those, maybe LeBron, hear me out, you know my theory on this before, and maybe it can still come together, LeBron and Bronny finishing up in Cleveland together, maybe another chance.
They're,
the Cavs are up big on the Lakers right now, I'm just saying, it might look enticing.
Bronny's not an NBA player.
I know.
There's that. And I mean, like, we'll start with that. And LeBron is just, it's like he's still trekking along. And I'm like, you're one of the top three players to ever play, but you're not starting in the All-Star game now. Like, it's time. It's time now, LeBron. And it's not on his effort or like, oh, he's no longer drinking. Like, dude, you're 23 in your 40s. Like, it's just not there anymore. He can't. I would be shocked if in the playoffs he's able to sustain his greatness and take over games. It's like he's still an amazing basketball player, but to be the impactful guy that we are talking about, and, oh, is he going to Cleveland? Is he staying with the Lakers? I think we're 2 or 3 years past that.
So do you think this is his last year?
I would say this without giving away the source. I saw a direct contact with LeBron James that he said, if I can't average 25 points per game in this league, I'm retiring. And then he did not average 25 points per game last season. So I'm surprised he played this year. And I'm like, you know, that's a $50 million. I don't care how rich you are. $50 million, I'll suit up for another season. But it's time. I think this should be his last year. And I think I would be surprised if he plays beyond this year.
All right, well, he's got 11 points tonight. He's 3 of 10 against the Cavs, and the Lakers are down 28 points right now, in case you're wondering. So he does not look – yeah, I mean, and listen, the NBA, too, Chris, has got – there's so much young talent. I know there's going to be a little bit of that feeling out point of, like, who really is the face of the league next, and it's still – you know, LeBron is – again, I know it's not the same LeBron, but he's still the polarizing figure no matter what he does, no matter how long he plays in this league. But that's the next thing the NBA is going to be sifting through is who sort of takes his place – even to a smaller degree as the, you know, quote-unquote face of the league.
Well, you know, Steph Curry kind of like became the people's champ, right?
Yeah, that's
true.
We
had that
for
a decade, and then I think it's the end of it. But now it's like there's so many – you know, I talked to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Anthony Edwards last year about this. interviewed both of them. Who's the face of the league? And for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's like, you know, I'm doing everything I should be, right? Like leading scorer, MVP, finals MVP. And then for Ant-Man, he's like, nah, I don't want that. Like, I don't want to be, I want to hoop. I think the answer is Victor Wembanyama, if he's able to play, if he's able to stay on the court, like who's the must-see person? And going to different arenas and traveling with the Spurs this year, you feel it. Like a Tuesday night game in Boston, a Wednesday night game in Minnesota, like the play in D.C. I think it was a Friday night game in D.C. And man, that place had so much energy. And I'm like, it doesn't matter the team or what they think the outcome is. Like the bad teams want to see their team slay the giant, which is Wimby. And the good teams are like, no, you're not taking our spot just yet. So like that kind of leans into face of the league territory, but he has to play and can't keep missing time.
So you don't give any love to my guy, Luka. Okay, that's fine. You know, we'll just ignore
Luka.
No,
man,
then.
Lazy Luka. Nope, lazy Luka now. His bed has been made, and he's sleeping in it.
I know. It's good to talk to you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Good to talk to you, man. Hopefully your guy, Luka, plays some defense next year.
I know what he doesn't care. He's averaging 34 points a game. That's all he needs to do with the Lakers. Come on. See you, Chris.
Losing by 30 to the Cavs.
It's LeBron's fault. See you, buddy. There he goes. Chris Miles, NBA TV, FanDuel Sports Network. Yeah, the NBA is going to have a transition no matter what. It happened when Jordan retired. Not counting when he came back with the Wizards, but there was that gap in the late 90s until 2003 when LeBron got drafted, where that was the first, like, is LeBron going to be that guy? And he lived up to the expectations and exceeded him. But at some point, kind of look and go, okay, yeah, it's probably time for LeBron to hang it up. And listen, to play 23 seasons in the NBA, not just the NBA, but international basketball, deep playoff runs every single year. I mean, the miles on LeBron James's body. Whew, jeez. All right, Nick Ashew on the fan. Nick Ashew on the fan. All right, Ryan Horvath jumps on with me now. And I know we've got 2 weeks, buddy, until the Super Bowl. And I know you're itching. I know you've probably bet like a million things. But the good thing is, we're not focused just on betting with this. We can do all things, as I know you can. So I know we've got, you know, what, a week and a half or so till the Super Bowl. I hate that there's 2 weeks between it. I'd love to just get to it now, but I know that's never going to change unless they maybe moved it even to a Saturday, like Super Bowl Saturday. You and I have talked about this. You know how I feel about that. But I know none of that's ever going to happen. They're going to give us an 18th game in the regular season instead. You mentioned the Patriots and them being likable. It's funny because I think there are a lot of people that still hate them because it's really just jealousy. I am fully admitting that I am jealous of the success and then the turnaround and more success that they've had. But they've gotten to this Super Bowl really in spite of Drake May. I mean, all of the turnovers, the fumbling problems. I mean, this was his first playoff, so I understand that. But when you look at this game, this, you know, this far out even, and I know there's a long way to go here, but to me, I think that is something that Seattle's got to zero in on, right? Just getting after Drake May and making his life miserable and forcing him into mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, he's struggled, but the defense has been excellent for New England. And Mike Vrabel's obviously done a great job. He's most likely going to be coach of the year, even though there's going to be some tough competition with Ben Johnson and with Liam Cohen. But, I mean, his team playing in the Super Bowl, they were great all regular season. I know they played an easier schedule, but it's a magical run. That said, I mean, it's early, man. I did bet a couple props that we could talk about, but I'm waiting here, and I probably shouldn't wait any longer because the number, I think, only continues to go up. I love making the case for the dog, and I think that there's a couple different ways you could play it if in the prop market if you do think that New England's going to win this game. But as far as the matchup, man, I don't love the number with Seattle being a 4.5, anywhere to 4.5, 5.5-point favorite. I wish they were 2.5 or 3 like they were last week when I bet them. But the matchup just absolutely sucks for the Patriots. I mean, Seattle's defense is elite, and that's why I love the Mike McDonald hire. He had that Baltimore defense humming a couple of years ago. They should have won that AFC championship game. They were averaging 6 yards per carry, and for whatever reason, Harbaugh and Todd Monken decided to drop Lamar back 38-plus times in that game. But the Seahawks defense has been elite all season, and now all of a sudden their offense, the same thing. I saw Pro Football Focus had this. They were the only team to record an 84-plus PFF grade in all three facets of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. They're just so buttoned up, and they played a tougher schedule. I mean, even the championship game, they didn't have
I mean, not to knock Jared Stidham because he went over his rushing yards for us, but I mean, they played a backup quarterback. Meanwhile, Seattle had to get past the Rams for the third time this season. Mm-hmm. New England played the 31st as far as strength of schedule, 31st. That's what they played. And it's just not a great matchup. Like I said, the Seahawks, the Patriots are going to want to push the ball down the field. I know that they've been able to run the ball a lot here, but they're still going to want to push the ball down the field. That's what makes Drake May so great, is he's big and he's tall, so he can see over these linebackers and he can push the ball down the field. But the Seahawks use a ton of too high coverage, so you can't really push the ball down the field against them. They really limit those shots down the field. They're one of four teams in the NFL to surrender 15 or more yards on less than 12% of passes faced. That's why a couple of weeks ago I brought up Devin Witherspoon as a potential Super Bowl MVP bet, because he was 250 to 1. I mean, most likely it's going to be a quarterback or a wide receiver, like it usually is. Don't waste your money on a running back. A running back hasn't won it since Terrell Davis. But man, like, if Seattle makes this ugly and it's a blowout and Witherspoon has a couple of picks, you can make the case for him, and I still think he's over 100 to 1. The other thing, the reason I hate this matchup for New England, and I can't make the case for them to cover or win, the Seahawks are able to generate pressure all game long. Seventh best in the National Football League, 39.8%. And they do it without having to send the blitz. Drake May, you said it, Nick, takes a ton of sacks. He's turned the ball over. And I don't really trust the Patriots' offensive line. I like the Will Campbell hire, and I think eventually he'll get better. I don't think he's a tackle. I think you have to move him to guard. The arm size, maybe it does mean something, but he's really struggled since coming back from this knee injury, staying in front of guys. So I like Seattle here, man. I just think that's an elite defense, a really good coaching staff, and Sam Darnold's a great story. Now, that said, if you want to make the case for the Patriots, I think they could win this game by taking the football away, you know, putting pressure on Sam Darnold, making things uncomfortable. That's why I think a good Super Bowl MVP long shot bet, you know, $5-$10, Marcus Jones, the corner for New England. So I went back and looked at this because I'm a psycho. Only one non-quarterback or wide receiver has won MVP the last decade. Two have done it the last 20 years. Like I said, a running back hasn't won it since 1997. And I believe we've had four defensive players since the year 2000. We had Von Miller, Malcolm Smith, Dexter Jackson, and Ray Lewis. Von Miller had 2.5 sacks in that game and forced 2 fumbles. Smith had a 69-yard pick 6 and a fumble recovery. Jackson, which is the weirdest name to ever win a Super Bowl MVP, Dexter mm-hmm. Jackson, he had 2 picks. And then Ray Lewis had 5 tackles and 4 passes defended. The reason I bring up Marcus Jones, he had 3 picks in the regular season, 2nd on the Patriots. He had 3 fumble recoveries. He had 2 sacks. He had that pick 6 in the playoffs a couple weeks ago against C.J. Stroud. And he also returns punts. He had 2 punt return touchdowns, tied for the NFL lead in the regular season. And he's got 3 punt return touchdowns and 3 picks for touchdowns in 51 career games. Somehow he has a receiving touchdown, which I don't remember. But right now, he's 100-1 or better, Marcus Jones. So rather than play the Patriots to cover, because I think the matchup sucks, I would take like a long shot like that. Maybe go Drake May, Super Bowl MVP, plus 240, because maybe finally he has a good game in the playoffs. But it's just hard for me to trust New England the way that Seattle's look, man. I mean, a couple of weeks ago they went in blowout fashion, and then they knock out the Rams with all that talent and the MVP of the league. They're hard to bet against right now, man. And people just want to doubt Sam Darnold. I love him in this matchup. I took him over 19.5 completions. I think he completes at least 21 to 22 balls.
So I'm glad that you said that. Talking to Ryan Horvat, at Ryan_Horvat, if you want to give him a follow on all of the socials. Sam Darnold, if you love the over on his completions, you obviously have enough confidence in him that he's going to maybe not have the same game that he did against the Rams, which was second highest QBR, by the way, in the playoffs behind Josh Allen and what he did against the Jags, just willing the Bills to that win by himself. But, you know, Sam Darnold to kind of exercise the demons, if you will, against a Rams team that's just given him fits this year, you know, at the end of his Vikings career last year. It sounds to me like you have enough confidence, at least in Sam Darnold. Maybe not throw for 347 and 3 touchdowns, but to be somebody that looks calm and comfortable and not seeing ghosts in the moment.
Yep. I mean, and he gets to kind of, it's like he gets to slay all the demons, right? I mean, he beats the Rams. He's been beating all these teams that have given him fits, and now he gets to go against New England. And if we remember his time with the Jets, he was seeing ghosts on the sidelines, and it was against, like you said, New England. Now, granted, Bill Belichick's gone, but Mike Vrabel's also a defensive genius. I love Darnold in this game. I don't know that, like you said, I don't know that he's going to set the world on fire, which, and he's the favorite to win MVP. So, again, I mean, if you are looking to place pizza money on this game, just something fun to cheer for on these prop markets, I like Jackson Smith and Jigba to be Super Bowl MVP because Sam Darnold loves him. He's been protecting the football. And JSN, Cooper Kupp was the last non-quarterback to win the Super Bowl MVP. He did it for the Rams in 2021. The second most recent non-QB was Julian Edelman in 2018. You know, Kupp, he was excellent in that game. He had, what, 8 receptions, 92 receiving yards, and 2 touchdowns. Same thing, Edelman, same thing, a couple touchdowns. JSN, we saw what he did against the Rams, and I know that their secondary has really struggled, but he had 10 grabs, 153 yards, and a touchdown. The nerd stats are insane, man. I mean, if you look at the fantasy points data, among 130 players with at least 250 routes in the regular season, he was second in air yards, first in air yard share, first in target share. I can legitimately see him, even against really good corners, Christian Gonzalez and Marcus Jones, having over 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. It's hard to argue that he's not the best wide receiver in the league right now. I think he should be the offensive player of the year. I mean, it's tough with Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, man, but JSN is just so damn good at getting open. So I don't hate him anything better than 5-1 to win the MVP just because Darnold's been so good. And, I mean, that was cute 3-4 weeks ago last season with Minnesota. Hey, we got to fade Sam Darnold in a big game. He's been one of the more consistent quarterbacks. The reason that he threw the interceptions this year was because in the offense, they want to push the ball down the field. Like we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, Nick, with Caleb Williams, the reason that he doesn't complete 70% of his passes is because not everything's at the line of scrimmage. Same thing with Darnold. He's a gunslinger. He's aggressive. Maybe he does throw a couple picks in this game, but I think he also throws a couple touchdowns. So I think he's a great story, and I trust him enough next Sunday.
All right, before you go, where are the Commanders going in the draft at number 7?
Oh, yeah. Before we even go there, though, real quick, Travion Henderson, bet this right now. Maybe it goes up. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe I'm the idiot. Over 17.5 rush yards. He had, what, 2 rushing attempts in that last game? I think with extra time to prep, Patriots going against that run defense, top 5. They're gonna have to get cute here, man. They're not gonna be able to just, you know, pound Stevenson into a brick wall. So I took him under 15.5 rush attempts, Henderson over 17.5. The beautiful thing about the Commanders, and I heard you talking about Dan, I don't think he should be on the hot seat. Was it a great year? No, but his franchise quarterback, starting quarterback, got hurt. It was always gonna be a tougher schedule because of what they did last year.
Right.
You at least gotta give him another year. Now if they underperform, I'm not saying, you know, 8-9 wins. If they're a 5-6 win team, most likely he's gone and you got to bring somebody else in. But the beautiful thing about this draft for this team is they do, even though they were just in the playoffs in the NFC Championship game, by the way, 2 years ago, one game away from the Super Bowl, they do have some needs. I would love for Jaden Daniels to be protected so he never gets hurt. I know a lot of that's on him. He has to slide. He has to get out of bounds. That's lazy. We always say the same thing. The beautiful thing about the Commanders, though, man, is they could draft another weapon for Jaden, but I think just with him back, the offense is going to be much better. You could get running back value later on in these drafts. I like the receivers where I think you could get like a sneaky receiver later on, kind of like the Bears did with Luther Burden. Everybody overreacts to these top guys where you could get some really sneaky value in the later rounds. I would want them to go defense. I would want a pass rusher. I would love for them to get aggressive and move up for a guy like Reuben Bain. But again, you don't have to just look at the sexy names. I think they got to go edge rusher though, man. They have to fix up that defense because look at these last couple Super Bowls. The Seahawks aren't in the Super Bowl because of Sam Darnold, as good as he's been. They're in the Super Bowl because they have a top 5 defense. The Eagles last year didn't win the Super Bowl because Jalen Hurts is a better quarterback than Mahomes. It's because their defense pressured him on 80% of the dropbacks. I think the way the Commanders get back to the NFC Championship game is defense. So I think you got to go pass rusher.
That's all anybody's talking about in D.C. Give Ryan Horvath a follow at Ryan_Horvath because there is nobody that is better at predicting the NFL draft, betting on it, mock drafts, anything than Ryan is. And I am not exaggerating when I say that. I've seen it firsthand. Ryan, great stuff, buddy. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, man. An edge rusher. I mean, this is, let's be honest. We all know that that is the only thing that this team should focus on with that number 7 overall pick. But then there's free agency. There's all kinds of other stuff. By the way, if you're looking at the Super Bowl and you're thinking about going, have you seen these prices this year? Nick Ashew on the Fan. Look, I get stuff's getting more expensive everywhere, and it's always that way, and it's probably sadly always going to be that way. But I'm looking at Super Bowl tickets this year, and it just continues to show that they don't give a damn about real fans actually going to these games. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I mean, premium lower level, $10,000 to $35,000. Just the lowest get-in price is about $6,000. That's very upper deck corner seats, like all the way there. I mean, this is just, that's the one thing about the Super Bowl. I've been there for plenty of these Super Bowl weeks and done that whole bit, but once Friday happens, people want to clear out that cover it or, you know, or even fans that just want to be there for the events because once you get to the game, it costs people so much money to go to these games now. And, like, I understand if you're the NFL, it's your big event. The Super Bowl is your Super Bowl, right? But you're just pricing out fans that really actually care about these games. And I get it. This is a business. This is how it's going to work. It's the last chance for the NFL to squeeze a ton of money out of people that are actually at an event before it comes down to all the other stuff. Like, this is a big moneymaker. So I understand from the business perspective. But, man, this is brutal. It's brutal to see this. Where there are, well, Patriots fans have seen a million wins, so they'll be fine. But, you know, there's plenty of Seahawks fans. It's been a long time since their team's been here. And, you know, you're going to miss out on that opportunity. Now, I get, too, it's an expensive area. Santa Clara Bay Area is really expensive. But, you know, you just look at this and go, man, this is, I know you can get maybe some cheaper stuff somewhere, but, you know, if the Commanders are in the Super Bowl, I mean, how much are you willing to really spend? I mean, everybody's got a different budget. Stuff is all over the place right now. I get all that, but thing is, these prices are never going to go down. It's like there's sticker shock every year when we see them, and then you realize, oh, wait, this is how it's been going for a long time. It just keeps going up. It's just frustrating, man. It's just tough to see that. You know, it's tough to see what should be the biggest event and really important for fan bases that care about their team. Like, you know, if you have a team that hasn't been there or it's their first time ever in a Super Bowl, or it's the first time, you know, somebody in their 30s or whatever, just all of it. I hate it. I know there's no changing it, and I know I shouldn't even be surprised, and like I'm not. But you know what I mean? Like when you see something like this and you just go, damn, man, like that's, you're just pricing so many fans out.
You ever feel like the ticket agencies have become the scalpers?
Yeah, a lot of ways, yes. I mean, well, you're also, I mean, with the fact that you add all those extra fees at a lot of these, I know. There have been lawsuits.
What are the Ticketmaster fees on a $6,000 Super Bowl ticket?
We should just look that up. I could look right here at Ticketmaster right now and see what they are because, it might take me too long. It's probably going to be ridiculous. They're probably, all right, let me see. Like, all right, Super Bowl, see tickets. No, I don't want to sell them. I want to see them. And this may be too much of a process. It might not be something I want to do live on the air. But, I mean, you're right, though. Like, that's part of it, too, is you've got all those extra fees. And then you're going out there and you're getting a hotel. And hotels are a premium out there. They're massively expensive. And you go to all that. And, all right, let me hear. I'm going to go section 401, row 18 for $6,507. I'm getting two. $13,015. All right, that's what we're looking at right now. Confirming availability. They want me to sign in and do all that. All right, I'm not doing all that. But just two tickets alone there, that's $13,000. Like, for two people. You want to go with a friend, you want to go with your wife, husband.
That's like multiple vacations.
Yeah. And they hear, like, that's the thing, is that you it ends up being something where it's very corporate, right? Because those tickets are given away by companies to clients and things like that, and you don't get an atmosphere at a Super Bowl the way that you would a regular season game. You're just not going to get that. And I know that college football playoff games are expensive, but you still get that vibe of a college playoff game, a college football game at these, you know, at the national championship game. It's just different. You don't get that with the NFL and the Super Bowl. And I know it's not going to change.
Probably not a lot of people with like the face paint and shirts off at this Super Bowl.
You're not getting any of that, no. If you're spending $13,000, you're probably going to keep your shirt on. I'm just going to guess that that's probably how it goes. I think most people are just keeping their shirts on if that's the case. But you're right. I mean, you add those fees. You add the hotel and flights. And remember, all that other stuff's jacked up, too. Like, unless you bought a hotel room 6 months ago, hoping your team was going to be there and maybe you could cancel it, which people do. I mean, those prices are all jacked up. And then it's everything else is going to be more expensive. Everybody's going to price gouge you. You know, I mean, in Vegas, God, it was ridiculous. And it's Vegas already. So, you know, Santa Clara is the Bay Area. It's a really expensive area. So you look at another spot where you go, okay, this is how it goes. I know I shouldn't be surprised, but I still just see it. And it's just like, God, every year it's only going to get worse for people. But, hey, you know what? If you want to spend that money, you can spend that money. You're comfortable with it, whatever. Your team's in the Super Bowl. Good for you. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. Well, we've got ourselves a name for the first voter that didn't vote for Bill Belichick as a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'll give him credit. I think his name is Vahe Gregorian for the Kansas City Star. I'm pretty sure that's how you say his name. I've heard of him before. Can't say that I've said his name out loud before, but now I have. He actually came out and said that he believes Bill Belichick belongs in the Hall of Fame, to the point where he wrote, it was, quote, hard to imagine a more accomplished candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His profile is such that you could make the case among Hall of Fame voters simply by saying his name. Certainly, it can be reasonably or be wondered what the meaning of the Hall of Fame that doesn't ultimately elect him is, which then makes you say, well, Nick, then if he says all that, why did he not vote for him? It sounds like Robert Kraft in his statement. Well, you're right, it does. So here's what he said. Gregorian cited his perceived flaws in the current voting system, where you have to choose, along with the other voters, three of five for the Hall of Fame. And it was Ken Anderson, the former Bengals quarterback, L.C. Greenwood, the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive end, 49ers running back Roger Craig, and Belichick, and Robert Kraft. So he said, in essence, he didn't vote against Belichick or Kraft. Rather, he voted for the other three players. And then there's a whole breakdown of how these different committees are, and you've got, like, a players group, you've got a seniors group, which with a different committee, and basically the voting system is so all over the place and overly complicated that he felt like he needed to vote for these guys as opposed to Bill Belichick, because he knew Belichick was going to get in, and these guys, it might be one of their last chances. That's the reasoning. Vote for them, not against Belichick. Sorry, that's not good enough. It's not good. I applaud him for coming out and saying this, but that's ridiculous. Because what you're saying is, when you put that vote, you what is going to change? What is going to change in Bill Belichick's resume that'll make you say, well, I didn't vote for him before because I thought these guys deserved it more at that moment, but now Belichick deserves it. This is stupid. We're overthinking this. Change the system. I will guarantee you they change the system when this is all done, though. You have to. This is so polarizing, and this has been such a topic over the last 24 hours that there is no way that this does not get changed. They've got a bunch of senior players that he thought maybe they're not going to get their last chance in. A lot of voters were feeling like it was a backlog in senior players that deserve to get in, and they want to give them their last chance to get in, and maybe, you know, they won't be able to later or whatever. There's this responsibility to them. Then fix the system. I mean, this is ridiculous. Fix the system. I'm sure these were conversations, and I've talked to, you know, voters before. It's just like awards voters. They've got their own process, and there's problems that they have with it privately that they'll discuss, and, you know, those types of things. But this system needs to be fixed, and needs to be fixed quickly, because
they could just have a separate system for just voting for seniors, like, you know, those kind of players, and then also have the new people coming up.
It just
make
it
two
be
different votes. Make
yes.
different votes.
It just shouldn't be this complicated. You shouldn't be having to choose. It shouldn't come down to, like, well, I can only pick three. Well, if all five that are on the list deserve to get in, why can't you just vote for them? Why do we overcomplicate this so much? Like, I can understand if there's a minimum amount of votes to get put on a list and get through the process and become a finalist and that whole thing. But this is so overcomplicated. Chris, I'm looking at this, and it's just like, okay, I give him all the credit in the world for coming out and explaining it. But, like, his explanation is it's damage control. That's all that is. And yes, it points out a flawed system, and I guarantee you it's going to get changed, but this is utterly ridiculous and complete. We are overthinking the process at a rate that is, I mean, so stupid. This is so dumb. And, I mean, at this point, it's too late. At this point, we're going to wait a year, and you know Bill Belichick's going to get in, but, like, what happens then with Tom Brady? Because there are still the reports, and what, you don't think that there wasn't personal for anybody? This is one guy coming out and saying he didn't vote for him because he voted for other people and there's a limit in this whole process. And okay, what about everybody else? Did everybody else feel that way? We're really going to believe that? I mean, we have got to stop overthinking stuff like this. I mean, this is absolute insanity. It just shouldn't be that. It should not be that complicated. I'm fine if Eli Manning doesn't get in the first couple of times. He'll probably be a Hall of Famer eventually. You beat Brady twice. You know, yeah, fine. But this is different. to have a quote and have a conversation about Bill Belichick and how much he should be in the Hall of Fame from a voter that did not vote for him because he had to vote for somebody else. I mean, this is the quote. I mean, think about this for a second. He says that his profile is such that you could make his case among Hall of Fame voters simply by saying his name. Well, everybody said his name, and you still didn't make enough of a case, apparently, because not everybody voted for him. This is a unanimous Hall of Famer right here. Simple, first ballot, unanimous, simple as that. It just should not be that complicated, yet here we are. I mean, this is just, it just shouldn't even be a conversation at this point. This shouldn't even have been a thing. But now it will be. And there's no way that Tom Brady isn't a first ballot Hall of Famer because there's going to be private conversations like, guys, all right, we got to make sure we vote Tom in. Nobody can let any personal vendettas in on this one. We already did with Bill. Can't do it again. It just feels so watered down now. And they're like, they're going to get rid of the process. I'll keep saying it. AI should just do it. Here's the criteria, ChatGPT. Now give me the Hall of Fame list here every year. We're just going to do that. Why? Why let human emotion get involved with this? Because there was still emotion involved with this too, right? It was like, I feel like these guys may not have many more chances to get in, so I'm going to vote for them instead. What? Why is that? Why are you even putting voters in this position? You're overthinking all of it. I mean, we've already watered down the Pro Bowl. By the way, the Cowboys had 8 Pro Bowlers. I know it's Pro Bowler. We're going to put it in quotes.
Blech.
And then, Chris, they didn't even make the playoffs. They had 8 Pro Bowlers.
I know.
Didn't even make the playoffs. I mean, if you want to talk about a watered-down title, Pro Bowler is as watered-down as anything is in sports. No, don't get me wrong. CeeDee Lamb had a great year, and you know they have some talent on that roster. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like the Cowboys didn't have talented players, but like when you think about it, 8 Pro Bowlers and a team doesn't make the playoffs, what does that really mean? Brandon Aubrey, absolutely, best kicker in the game. Tyler Smith, their left guard, yeah, like he's really good. George Pickens had a great season. Dak Prescott, really good regular season quarterback. So these aren't even names that I have a problem with, like Bill Belichick not getting into the Hall of Fame. But at the same time, you just kind of look at it and go, all right, well, the Cowboys had 8, and they didn't make the playoffs. Shador Sanders is a Pro Bowler, but he's not really a Pro Bowler, but he is. Just change the whole, like, meaning of it, right? Whoever is voted in for the season they had as a Pro Bowler, they keep that title. Everybody else, you just come up with some other name for them. I don't know what it is, but come up with something. Anything. Like Shador Sanders, I mean, just you can't just call him a replacement. That's a little disrespectful, but like, I mean, he is a Pro Bowl replacement, but we can't just say just replacement. I don't know what you call him. A participant. A games participant. There you go. He gets a participation trophy. There, we can give out participation trophies. I solved the problem live on the air. That's it. We're done. That's it. Because, I mean, we've laughed about this before with Snoop Huntley. It just, again, I'm glad they got rid of the game. It was dumb. It wasn't real football. We all know that, and that's fine. But you have to have some way of honoring players that had a great season because all-star nods mean something, right?
You got contract incentives when you get them, too. I mean,
and you do. And you do. You have those contract incentives, and it means nothing. So, guys, and I understand why, you know, Drake May not in it, playing in the Super Bowl, all of that, JSN, all that. Okay, that makes sense. Even a flag football game, none of it. They need to be with their team. They shouldn't be here. This is also the NFL's fault for putting it between the conference championships and the Super Bowl. This is also what you're going to get. You're going to have guys that can't play because of that. So, okay, you move on from that. We realize now guys that are actually voted in that are real Pro Bowlers, they get the title. Everybody else, you're a participant. That's all you have to do. Because you can't sit here and then now say officially on his resume, Shador Sanders has already been a Pro Bowler. Because he didn't have a Pro Bowl season. So we've just, you know, sometimes you have to have things come to a head before you really see where there's a problem. It's clear the NFL has got to rework this. So one thing about the NBA, when they can't figure out their all-star format, but at least they're trying different things. And they're willing to turn around and admit they had a problem quickly. So we'll see how the format this year is, but you know they're willing to change stuff, and I'll give them credit for that. Some stuff works, like the play-in tournament. Some stuff doesn't, like what they did with the all-star game last time. All right, Chris, great stuff, buddy. I love working with you as always. Thanks to Ryan Horvath. Thanks to Ben Strober and Chris Miles, who all joined the show. Podcast will be up. Nick Ashew on The Fan. I'm back Friday on 980.